Found the Sun on the Strip podcast. My name is Brock Radke. I'm the entertainment writer and columnist for the Las Vegas Sun, and I'm here every Wednesday with all the latest from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, as well as an exclusive interview with one of the entertainers or performers that makes Vegas so fabulous. Thanks for listening. I've got a rare interview to share today with one of the cast members of Absinthe. But before we get to that, I have to talk about Zumanity. This is a pretty dark week for Vegas entertainment. Cirque du Soleil announced on Monday that Zumanity will not be reopening at New York, New York. You can read my story about this development right now at LasVegasSun.com. This is the first and hopefully only Cirque du Soleil production to close permanently due to the pandemic, and the Canadian entertainment company, which filed for bankruptcy earlier this year and has been doing significant restructuring while planning to reopen resident and touring shows around the world, also announced this week that it has re-signed contracts to keep its other Vegas shows in place. Those are Mystère at Treasure Island, O at Bellagio, The Beatles' Love at the Mirage, Ka at MGM Grand, Michael Jackson 1 at Mandalay Bay. Of course, those shows won't be reopening until Cirque and its casino partners decide it's safe to do so and that they can make money again and sustain themselves. Zumanity would have celebrated 17 years at New York, New York in September, this past September. It was, of course, the sexy show in Cirque's repertoire, the cast and crew of about 120 highly skilled humans were notified on Monday as well. Zumanity was one of my favorite shows in Las Vegas, and I know I probably say that a lot on this podcast, but I can honestly say that I very vividly remember the couple of times I've seen it in the last few years, and that both were among the most emotional experiences I've had watching any kind of show in Vegas. It was sexy and really funny and still maintained some of those Cirque signature elements, but it was also so warm and affectionate and joyful. It really evolved over the years into a celebration of sexuality and diversity and acceptance. Acceptance of others and acceptance of your own physical self. Going to see Zumanity was going beyond a Vegas show or a Cirque show. It was a special experience. It was also probably the most overlooked Cirque show in Vegas, and it certainly wasn't the most profitable, which is sadly a big part of why it's over now, but it won't be forgotten. And I just want to recognize everyone who contributed to and participated in the creation and production of one of my favorite Vegas things. And I'm definitely going to be writing more about Zumanity, so stay tuned. Absinthe reopened to great acclaim on October 28th at Caesars Palace, and the company behind the show, Spiegelworld, is working behind the scenes to get its other two Vegas shows up and running as soon as possible. An interesting thing about Spiegelworld, its performers aren't really identified publicly. They're playing characters, and they are identified that way, and you don't see a lot of profiles or interviews with these artists, but that's exactly what we've got today, exclusively for The Sun on the Strip. One of the most recognizable acts from Absinthe and from Opium as well is The Girl in the Bubble, a pretty wild combination of dance, acrobatics, and contortion. You're not going to see anything like it in any other show in Vegas. It's sexy and funny and really one of a kind. And the artist behind this act for the last 3 years is Lucia Carbines. She was born in New Zealand and grew up in Australia, training in the circus arts. And she's really just a mesmerizing performer. She's traveled the world with Spiegelworld and other touring shows and has worked as an aerialist as well. But she's really known in Vegas for this balloon act. And I was thrilled to get a chance to talk about it with her. And she does such a great job here, breaking it down and explaining exactly what she does and how she does it. This is Lucia Carbines.
You are from Australia, and I've spoken to quite a few Aussies who are performers in Las Vegas. Can you explain to me why Australians are so awesome?
Oh, that is a hard question. How do you put a finger on it? We are pretty awesome. I don't know. It's culture, I think. How can you not be happy when you live in Australia on golden beaches and the weather and everyone's just happy and content. Everyone will say hi, g'day down the street. It's just, there's a big culture of talking to each other too. Like, I had to get used to that when I went on tour and going overseas. I was so used to walking down a street and you're like, hi, morning, how's it going? Everyone is saying hi to everyone. And that's just part of Australia.
Is Australia still home for you? I mean, I know you're here in Las Vegas now while you're performing, but is that still, you consider that to be your home?
Yeah, Vegas definitely feels more and more so like home. I mean, Australia will always be where my heart is. I'm also was born in New Zealand, so I have a lot of family there as well. So I'm kind of a Kiwi Aussie blend. So I spent a bit of time in between, but Australia is always, I think, where I will end up again. But I'm pretty surprised that Vegas has very much become home and feels like home for right now.
Now, you started training and performing when you were really young, still in your teens, I think. Mm-hmm. What originally led you down this path?
I had pretty fun and crazy alternative parents. So they sold rainbow clothing for a living, and we would travel around and do the markets. And because of that, I was homeschooled. But I was a super social kid. So from the age of 2, I started ballet, and I was kind of, for me, socializing as I got older was by doing other activities outside of school time, because I was doing my schoolwork at home and would be traveling around a lot. So I kind of was actually performing pretty regularly from the age of 7. I started playing the violin and would busk at the markets while my dad would sell clothing, his rainbow clothing at the store. So I was sort of always street performing from a really young age and going from one thing to the other, from dance, tap, musical theater, acrobatics, and then circus stuck when I was 14. This little circus academy opened up around the corner from our house, and I went on opening day to try it out and just fell in love with it. They asked me to join the elite team. And because I was homeschooling, it was actually a really pretty big benefit at the time, because I could put way more hours into training. So a lot of the girls that I sort of, we all started in this elite group at the same time, but they were going to school and they would be training certain hours after school. So they started performing sort of a little later. But for me, I was just obsessed. I was full-time training. I would do my schoolwork during the day and then go and train at the gym with the teachers, and started performing with them professionally at 15 and a half. I did a couple gigs and corporate gigs. Was just started as filling in for the teachers or for their performance crew. If someone was out, I was always ready and I would sort of get in that way. I would always need like parental permission to be going to these venues. But, and then, from 16, performing full-time with them in a casino show. And that was when Spiegelwald came to Australia on their Empire tour, and I just happened to be there at the right place at the right time and started performing with them.
They grabbed you up.
They grabbed me up. It was actually really fun. Sort of, I think I was 17 then. I was performing a high wire motorbike trapeze stunt at the Grand Prix Formula One, which is where my friend Phoenix Harrison would be riding a motorbike on a tight wire, or on a slack wire actually, 42 meters in the air, and I would be hanging off a trapeze underneath him, and the trapeze is what kept the motorbike on the stunt. So you should Google it, the high wire motorbike stunt. So we would be doing like 6 shows a day at the Grand Prix above the track that was racing, and Spiegelwald was performing at the Crown Casino in Melbourne, and their contortionist Elena Lev just was out. She had a medical condition come up and just couldn't do shows, and it was opening week. The bubble had been, their advertising, it was on the logo, it was on the posters, it was like the girl in the bubble was sort of a big push for Empire, the show. So they were like, how are we going to open the season in Melbourne without the sort of act that's advertising the show? heard that I was there through a mutual friend, and Tracy Morley found me, and just that was it. I had a got called in, had a 1 hour sort of interview, which was essentially trying to learn the act or see what I could put together, and then I performed what I had, and she just sat me down and said, all right, you're in the show tonight. can you make something work for the show tonight? And the rest is, yeah, history was being ruled.
Wow. So, and that's the act that probably Vegas knows you best for, the girl in the bubble in Absinthe and in Opium.
That would actually is a little confusing. I'm now just the bubble girl, because that act was the aerial sphere. So currently the balloon act that I'm doing is what I've ended up doing a lot more, but that's more recent. So we used to call the aerial sphere the bubble act. And then when I started doing this act, it was also called the bubble act. And for a while in Absinthe LA, I was doing both. I was doing the aerial bubble and the ground balloon act. But so for my first sort of 6 years of performing with Spiegelwald, the aerial sphere was my main act. And then after moving to Vegas with them, for a while I was doing both. And now in Opium and Absinthe, I'm doing the balloon on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've done a lot of different stuff. Like you said, you've done a lot of aerial stuff, obviously contortion. Is there a style of performance that you enjoy the most?
It's hard to put a finger on what I enjoy the most. There's definitely something really special and exhilarating about being in the air. I mean, when you're on the ground, you are just, you're grounded. The ground is always there and you know it's there. There's definitely an extra element of aerial performing. I'd say that was, for a while, was definitely my favorite. As I was younger and I was training, aerial was definitely what I specialized in more so than contortion, but I just happened to be extremely naturally gifted in contortion, where a lot of people aren't. So that was my edge, was that all those years I trained aerial, but the fact that I could do contortion as well was sort of what separated me from the majority of performers. And I've ended up doing contortion more and more as I've gone into my professional career and worked with Spiegelwald more and more, because that's, I guess, a little less common.
Right.
And to have that element and be able to mix it with aerial. So it was often the aerial sphere act was really a contortion act in the air, because you could still do sort of handstands and contortion poses inside a sphere, but up in the air. And there was still the element of height. So sometimes I miss aerial performing a little bit. This is the first time in my career that it's been, I'd say, almost 3 years now that I've just done a ground act. But then the balloon is another whole dimension in itself that adds another exciting element. Like when I started developing that act with Spiegelwald, and that sort of started taking over from the other bubble act and being the main thing I was doing, it has another element to it that's different from just doing contortion on the ground, because all of a sudden you're inside a balloon. And you're putting your head inside something, and you have, you know, a limited amount of air in there. You have, depending on what actor is doing, sometimes with the purple balloon, you're completely blind. So getting used to all of a sudden, like, running around on a stage and moving your body and doing stuff, but you can't see anything, that adds a whole other element of, basically, it's like you have to train yourself to be able to do your act with your eyes closed.
Yeah, it seems kind of impossible, I think, from the audience perspective. But you do other things that seem impossible too, and are impossible for some people with contortion. Contortion is so specific. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's probably more rare to find performers who do that. How did you find out that you could do this? And is it as strenuous as it looks when you're doing it? Because it looks difficult and, you know, painful. That's what people think about it. What is it like to actually do that?
That's the most common thing I get. Oh man, it looks so painful. I can't even touch my toes. And it's, I fell into it just through training. So there's definitely two types of contortionists in the world. And there's a lot of contortionists that come sort of out of Mongolia and China. And so you can train to be a contortionist from a very young age. And that's sort of the most traditional way is that you'll start training at 3 or 4 years old when your bodies are more supple and you keep that flexibility. Although there's some negative sort of feeling towards this because it's not necessarily a natural ability, and to be training it with children from a young age for so long, there's been some studies and you sort of find that their backs are so flexible because they have stress fractures through their back, which sort of enables, that have happened at a young age and enables them to maintain that flexibility. For myself, I've had a bunch of MRIs and x-rays and stuff where physios have just been so curious what's actually going on with my body. And I have just smaller spinous processes than other people in one section of my spine, which just means that a normal spine can, with flexion or bending around, it gets to a point where the spinous processes will start to sort of touch or get close, and that just stops you from being able to go any further. But there's one section in my spine where they're quite small. So I never knew that I had that natural flexibility. It wasn't until I was 14, as I said, when I discovered the circus school and doing the aerial training, and in that elite group, we would all go through the same stretching routine. So our coaches would sort of, we're all trying to improve our flexibility and have all these stretches to do. And it just happened that one day we were in a back bend and my coach was like stretching my back and was pulling. And she's like, tell us when it hurts. And I just kept going and going and going until my butt was sitting on my head. And there was no way further that my body could go. Like, wow, okay, you need to do contortion. And at that time, it actually made it a little more difficult for me with my other training, because all of a sudden it's like I had this naturally flexible spine that I wasn't super aware of, because with your muscles being tight and sort of you're just holding yourself upright all the time, everything tightens up. As soon as I started making my muscles more flexible, like there was no end for me. I was just this noodle. So with a lot of training things I was doing, I had to start controlling my flexibility. So to answer your later question, it's not painful for me. My biggest one as a contortionist was actually learning how to stabilize and control. So I don't have to work on my flexibility in my spine, my legs and hips. I continue to work on it, and sometimes, they get tight, and that's like most dances, I'd say that's more normal. But my spine flexibility, I'm working a lot harder on doing Pilates and just stabilizing so that I have strength to sort of control this flexible spine. When I'm doing an extreme back bend, I'm not in pain like people would anticipate. It's more just the muscular sort of tension of holding an extreme pose like that and breathing. Breathing is the most difficult thing. When you turn yourself upside down and squish yourself in half and go into these crazy poses, to get air through is a lot more difficult. There's so many more elements that people don't see, but the pain side of it is not really there.
Fascinating. And you've taught a little bit too, right? Taught mobility and stuff like that.
Yeah. I have a certificate in PT and training, and I did a bunch of, I've taught a lot, maybe 7 or 8 years. I was training a lot when I was at home, teaching classes, teaching fitness and personal training. And on tour, I was doing contortion workshops. I just would do them in sort of every city that we were in. And more recently, it's more flexibility training and strengthening.
So how many years have you been in Las Vegas now?
3 years in September.
And when you first came, you had already done the two, the Sphere and the Bubble Act on tour and in New York and stuff like that. And so now you're going to do it in a Vegas show, which I'm sure was different from past experience, but how much, I guess, creative space do you get when there's an act that already exists in the show and now you're coming in to do that act? Do you get creative space to kind of make it your own and change the presentation a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And for the Bubble Act, I definitely did. For both, really. The Sphere, all those years ago, I was, again, that act already existed and I was replacing someone. But it was such a new thing that hadn't been done before very much, that it was so different and unique. I was just allowed to play. And then over the 5 years that I performed that act, I very much made it my own and had all the creativity I wanted to with coming up with stuff that had never been done in that apparatus before and finding new tricks and finding new ways of getting through things. And the balloon was that as well. It was actually an idea that Ross Mollison had and Julie Atlas Muse, who was the balloon. So contortion balloon had never been done before, really, before Jordan McKnight ended up doing it. But at the time I was working in Opium with Spiegelworld, and they originally had this idea and talked to me, and we were talking with Julie about how to put contortion into a balloon. But I was sort of full-time with shows, so they ended up going in another direction and creating the act with Jordan McKnight, who originally did Absinthe before I did with this, with the balloon. But that was her version. So when Empire closed and then they contacted me and said, actually, we're doing Absinthe LA, we'd love to revisit that idea. You know, we've done it. Well, we've tried a version with Jordan, who's performing in Absinthe. We'd like you to come up with your own version. It was a really fun, creative process between Julie Atlas Muse, Tracy, and myself. And it was just something that I tried to sort of, you know, I know something's been, even if something's been done before, especially as a performer, I really want to find my way of doing it and something that works for me. And everyone is so unique and different. So that creative process for me was really fun of going, okay, well, this has really never been done before. And then with her, and she's got her own tricks, like there's so much possibility of what can be possible or not possible inside this apparatus. It's been used for decades with more sort of burlesque and striptease and dance, but how much can we bend around it or do handstands in it or do other things? And also how sort of what feel do we want the act to be? Is it funny? Is it sexy? So I was given a lot of sort of creative freedom in that place, which I loved, and was able to working with Tracy, and who's our choreographer. So she was sort of really helping input some of the dance and some of the snappy stuff. And then working with Juliette Smuse, who the balloons are her babies. She's been doing them for years. So all the technical sides, how long you can breathe in there, how long you can stay in there, you know, how you need oil to slip your body into it, all the technical side of someone who's worked with this apparatus for years and years.
I think that's one of my favorite things about Absinthe and Opium too, for that matter, all Spiegelworld shows, is that, you know, there's these variety of acts, and if you break it all down, like this is kind of an acrobatic act. Pole is an acrobatic act. There's a bunch of acrobatic acts, but they're all so different. Mm-hmm. And the difference lies, to me, in the personality of the performer. Anybody else doing what you do would be completely different. And the way that they kind of cultivate artists and choose people from all over the world to come and do these different things is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So you were back in the bubble when Absinthe reopened recently for that very first show. What did that feel like to get back on stage after so many months away from performing?
Yeah, interesting. It was definitely a bit of a shock to receive that phone call, to have been, you know, basically isolating or just sort of in lockdown for what felt like 7 months, or it was 7 months actually, just, and I mean, I keep fit, but I wasn't necessarily training throughout that time. It's really hard to make yourself train when you don't have a goal in sight. It sort of feels like, what's the point? Or just enjoying some downtime. So I was really excited and happy to get the call, and then a little nervous, like, okay, in 2 weeks' time, can I be ready to perform 10 shows a week? I've just done nothing with my body for several months. But fortunately for me, and I know, I think for a lot of people, it was a real challenge to get physically able. The balloon act it's definitely still strenuous, and there's so many elements, but if I were going back in to do an aerial act, it would have been the physical element of getting my cardio back up, getting my stamina back up, being able to physically sort of get through an act that was that demanding. The balloon act for me is demanding in other ways. And as I said, because a lot of my flexibility is natural, I knew that that would still be there, but it was just sort of getting the legs flexible and doing some training and then being back around people again. Like going from just seeing my two other friends that are in my little bubble that sort of has been for the last 7 months to all of a sudden like being around people and stuff's happening. And there was, all these amazing protocols in place. So it was really a trip. It was such a trip to go back from, having all that time off, and then you're going back to work, but work's different because of the time that we're in, because of COVID. It's not just how you would imagine going back to normal work again. Like the normal is gone. It's a new reality. You're wearing masks. And for me, I'm wearing double masks because I take off my outside sort of GIMP mask and I have a mask underneath. So wearing double layer inside, like, is a little claustrophobic already, and then you're in a balloon. There's all these elements.
It's a lot of layers.
It's a lot of layers. I definitely had some trouble breathing for the first run-throughs that I attempted it. And having a new stage, I'm used to performing in the rounds, and all of a sudden, it's like, all right, you've got 2 weeks. You're having rehearsals, and you're performing up in a new space with the audience being one direction. So sort of taking apart your act that you've done for 3 years nonstop and picking at it and getting it out of your body that you have to change things. Cause once it's something you've done for so long, it just becomes like riding a bike. And you just step on stage again and do it in your sleep. And that's sort of what I imagined when I got the call, but then to be changing it up as well on top of it. It was a crazy 2 weeks, but it was super fun. And getting through opening night and seeing the audience's reaction, and I think how much they've been craving for some kind of entertainment. It felt really awesome to be part of it.
Well, I was lucky enough to go see Absinthe when it came back, and I was really impressed by everything that's being done to keep the audience and the artists safe and comfortable. Yeah. And it was just as great a show as ever to me. So
thank you. That's so nice to hear. Yeah. I was super impressed actually when I heard I was going back to work. I've been really, really careful this whole shutdown, and I was a little nervous about being around people and sort of increasing exposure. But I have to say, with all the regulations and that they've put in place and the temperature checks and the distancing, I think it's really great. Also seeing a show and seeing people there, to be able to go see a show and feel safe. Like, I've been in situations through this lockdown where you want to go somewhere and then you sort of try, but it's just not going to be safe. But I think Speaker World have done a really good job. And myself personally, I thought I would feel a little bit worried being at work, and it's such a relief that with how strict everything is, I just actually feel safe. And it's nice that the punters, and you saying as an audience member that you also did. I think that's really good.
That's it for this week's episode. Thanks for listening, and special thanks to Lucia for taking time to chat with me on the Zoom.
You can see her in Absinthe right now. Absinthe is playing at 7 and 9:30 p.m. Wednesday through Sunday at Caesars Palace. Go get your tickets at spiegelworld.com. You can listen to past episodes of the show, this show, at lasvegassun.com/podcast. You can also listen and subscribe to The Sun on the Strip at Apple Podcast. Thanks again for joining me. I'll be here next week.